objects of the world create desire and attachment, anger and hatred. And so the objects that I like, I run after, I pursue, and objects I dislike, I run away from. And that is what we had studied 2 weeks ago in verse number 16. So what happens when I run after objects I like, or when I run away from objects I dislike? If I get the objects, it creates joy. If I don't get them, it creates sorrow. So today's talk, we'll talk about joy and sorrow, and this mad pursuit of things and beings that we constantly undertake or constantly practice or constantly carry out. And that kind of controls our life, binds us, gets us almost mad with desire. We'll talk a little bit about that. And that is covered in verse number 17, page 32. Labhe sukhi tatha dukhi. Ya labhe priya vastunah. Sansaro yam maya prapto. Mithya dhyasa purasarah. So, labhe sukhi. So, having got, labh means profit. So, having obtained what I wanted, I am happy. And alabhe, and when I don't get what I want, priya vastuna means what I desired I did not get, then I become sorrowful. So, I am happy when I get what I wanted. I am sorrowful when I do not get a desired object. And sansara ayam maya praptaha. This sansara, this world of joys and sorrows has been obtained by me, or has been gotten by me, or I find myself in this world of joy and sorrows. But why does this world give me joy and sorrows? Mithya dhyasa, by a superimposition, by a wrong projection. Purasaraha, this world, when I project something that is not there, that is when I get joy and sorrow. So what is this superimposition or projection? We'll talk about a little bit. So there are a few points. As I said, joy and sorrow depends on getting or not getting. And it is all relative. Like if you ask somebody, are you happy or unhappy? It says it depends. The same people in the same position in the company, they have a clerical job. And you ask one, are you happy? Oh, I'm very happy. I didn't have a job last month. I got this job. I'm so happy. Another person, are you happy in this job as a secretary? No, you know, I was a manager in the previous company. Then my company got downsized. I lost my job and I came here. That's what they say in America, everything gets downsized except the human body. But anyway, so are you rich or poor? You say, well, you know, compared to the man walking on the street, the homeless, I'm very rich. But compared to Bill Gates, I feel myself poor. So happiness, unhappiness, joy and sorrow is all depending. The same person in the same situation could have joy and sorrow based on the situation. So everything in our life, and we say, I am independent, I am free. But actually, we are not free. Why? Because we are constantly under this hold of desire. I must have this, I must get this, I must want this. By getting this, my life will be perfect. And by not getting this, my life is imperfect. But the problem is that the source of our desire also changes. Something, the same thing, you know, one person makes that person very happy, another one unhappy, like there is a bottle. A teetotaler will walk by, has no doesn't even look twice, but an alcoholic, he watches by and he wants to grab it. Or the same person, at one time he loved alcohol, but then he goes to AA and he quits. So that same alcohol now creates distaste in that person. The same person, you know, one time when he was a little baby, he was so loving, so cute. Look at all his pictures. And now he has become a teenager. It makes me pull my hair. So the same situation or the same person can create joy and sorrow depending on the situation. But not understanding that the joy is within, or the happiness or peace is within, we look for happiness outside, in that object or in that person or in that situation or in that power or in that wealth. And so that creates desire. I want this, I want that, I must have this. And then as we see, desire leads to other impurities. We have talked about impurities in this class earlier, you know. Desire creates anger when I don't get it. Or when I get it, it creates pride, it creates arrogance. You know, I have more than this other person, or I am so great. But then I find somebody else has more than me, then I get jealous. Or if I got little but I want more, so it creates greed. So greed and jealousy and hatred and anger, all of them are the byproduct of desire. In Gita also, when the student asks the teacher, what is the biggest problem, O teacher, O Krishna, he says it is desire. Because the desire is the root of, and the desire comes from a feeling that I am imperfect, I am incomplete, I am somehow not good enough. It does not mean that one should not try or one should not work hard to be successful. But that activity to work should come from a desire to do better, to make myself better. But if it comes from a sensation of incompleteness, that somehow I am not good enough, if only I had this person. So when that incompleteness comes, then it creates more discontentment, creates more, you know, stress in the life, more strains. But if a person is content, he says, okay, oh Lord, whatever abilities you have given me, I have done the best. And I will continue to do the best. I will serve you and I will serve mankind. And with that thought, and also with that attitude of gratitude that, Lord, whatever I have is your gift to me, and whatever I do with it is my gift to you, then a person has an attitude of contentment that I have done my best, O Lord, now the result is in your hand. And so that leads to a great sense of peace. Even in the Gita it is said that, or in the scripture, they say contentment is the hallmark of a devotee of the Lord. Who is content? It does not mean that he does not progress or does not work hard, but at the end of the day, he does not have a sense of discontentment. She says, Lord, I am happy where I am, where you have placed me. So when we work out of this desire, out of this incompleteness, it leads to bondage. Bondage means that I do not even this. We live in a free country. I am not bound. I can say what I want. I can go wherever I want. I can live wherever I want. I can practice whatever religion I want. Yes, that is very wonderful. And that is the beauty of, you know, of living in this country. But we still feel that we are not truly independent. Because, as we have said again and again, the moment I depend on somebody or something, then it's our founder, teacher Swami Chinmayananda used to say, do not put the key of your happiness in somebody else's pocket. So that if this person smiles at me, I'm happy, or this person talks to me, I'm happy, or at a party, this person acknowledged. So then this person has the power to turn the key of your happiness. You know, turns the key, make you happy, turns the key, make you unhappy. But if I say I am, you know, I am a Lord's creation, I am a divine being, the Lord has put me here, created me with divine love, and I am fine. If this person talks to me, that's wonderful, very nice, I want to be their friend. But if tomorrow they say, I don't care for you, I don't want to be your friend, okay. You go your way, I go my way. So when I realize that I am a divine creation of the Lord, I am perfect, I am good, I am, again, not out of arrogance, but out of an attitude of confidence that I am the divine, the divinity is in me, the Lord is in me as life, then I do not, again, then I do, I'm not bound, I'm not dependent. And it is this bondage which creates vasanas, which creates tendencies. Vasanas, of course, most of you know, but it is these tendencies or these deep-seated desires which make me do what I do. It is that which makes an alcoholic drink. It is that which makes a spiritual person go to church. So these tendencies develop out of repeated choices. I make repeated good choices, I develop good tendencies, good vasanas. I make repeated bad choices, I develop bad tendencies, bad vasanas. So these vasanas or the tendencies are the cause of all this joy and sorrow. And also if most of us, I think, believe in rebirth, especially after coming to this class, hopefully most of you do, then it is these vasanas which are the cause of my rebirth. Because the reason we take birth is because we have these unfulfilled tendencies which did not get completely satisfied in this life. And then that is why you take a new birth. So that's what they say, bondage is the sense of dependence. And this comes from a wrong understanding. As I said, not knowing a thing as it is, we place something else on it. We place our joy and sorrow on it, or we place our peace of mind on it, or we place our... And that comes from wrong understanding, comes from superimposition. Now, what is the word superimposition? Adhyas, it has also been mentioned in this text, that what is this meaning of this word superimposition? Superimposition means I superimpose or I place something on a thing which is not really its true nature. I place something on it. Like to give an example, if you walk into the main hall, there is a statue of Krishna, and you say, what is that? That's just a piece of stone which has been carved into the shape of a human being. But we say, no, that's not just a piece of stone, that is God, that represents for us Lord Krishna, because he incarnated on earth. We believe that the Supreme Lord incarnated on earth as Lord Krishna, and so that's why we worship that. Talking about superimposition reminds me of a little story. This little Jewish boy was very poor in math. He never passed. He could not study. And his father says, being Jewish, you should know how to calculate, and you have to be, you cannot be poor in math. You know, that's one thing is not allowed. He would never study. So, you know, his father tried everything. Finally, he found out there is a very nice Catholic school nearby. So he said, I'm going to put him in this Catholic school. I've heard that the education level is very good. And so he put him there, and within a month, he had 100%. He had perfect, you know, marks in the first test. He said, how did that happen? You never even got hardly 20 or 30%, and now how did you get 100%? He said, Father, in that Catholic school, they don't fool around. He said, what do you mean they don't fool around? I went there and they had a man nailed to a plus sign. So when you walk into a church, you see that cross, and somebody might say, what is that? It's only two pieces of wood. You say, no. That cross is for me, is holy, is divine. Why? Because it reminds me of Jesus' sacrifice. It reminds me of God. So on that stone, you can superimpose God, or on that cross, you can superimpose that divinity, or even on a book, like, you know, the Sikhs, you know, the Guru Granth Sahib, their spiritual text. They say that is God. Why? Because it came from the mouth of the divine Guru, and it's the Lord's teachings. So you might say, it's just a pieces of paper, it's just a book. You say, no, I put it in my temple, I wrap it in a cloth. So we superimpose something good upon a wooden piece or upon a stone or upon a book. Or it could be, superimposition could be something negative, like we have talked many times, but we can just repeat the example of the rope and the snake, where you are walking in a country road where it is kind of dark, semi-dark. It's not bright sunlight and it's not completely dark. And you happen to see a piece of rope. And not seeing the rope as a rope, you think it is a snake. And so you get all the fear and all the, you know, you get the start sweating. And some people have this fear of snake. They might even become unconscious, might even faint. So the rope was never a snake, but I superimposed the snake on it. So the superimposition could be positive, like I superimpose God on some object, or it could be negative. Similarly, upon people and situations, we superimpose. We superimpose this person is good. You know, sometimes we just see the person, we don't even know it, and we automatically accept he is good. Or this person looks very suspicious. And we superimpose negative or positive situations not only on individuals but on the whole society. Like all, you know, Germans are like that, or all French are like that, or all Mexicans are like that. Or if you go to France, they'll say all Americans are like that. So not knowing or not even trying to find out whether this person is good or bad, we automatically have our preconditionings, our pre-notions, our pre-judgments. And so doing that, what happens is then we go around branding the world. You know, we brand the whole world as this is good and this is bad and this is my friend and this is my enemy and this belongs to my religion, this belongs to my community, this belongs to my state, this belongs to my church. And this branding, we do more after we have had a little brandy. But the point is that this branding or this labeling, and we find that companies, they spend millions of dollars in brand name, you know, Nike, just do it. They have promoted that, they have spent millions of dollars in advertising. Why? Because they want their particular brand. But in life, when we label situations, and then that is our biggest problem. That is our biggest ignorance. That our joy and sorrow then is no longer in my hand, no longer with me, but dependent on this particular situation. So they say that this is the main cause of all our sorrows. It comes from desires, and then this creates all the other negativities, all the other impurities, all the other problems in our life. Because then we are running from one object to another, you know, I'm not happy in this job, I'm going to leave and move to another job, you know, I'll be happier, I'll be free. Or I'm not happy in this city, maybe I'll by moving to the coast, you know, it's too hot in Bakersfield, by moving to the coast, I'll be happy. Or I don't like this state of California, they have too much taxes, so I'll move to Nevada or move to Arizona. And then I start complaining about the heat and, you know, all the other things. So that's what they say, that the impurities of the mind, which is this text which talks about the impurities of the mind, all come from this basic sense of ignorance of who I am, this basic sense of insecurity, and this basic sense of imperfection, which then leads to desires. So that is the source of all the problems. Another point that I just briefly wanted to touch upon, which I think the teacher Swamiji also has made in his text. He says that this knowledge, when you acquire from either from reading the book or from listening or from meeting, you know, a teacher or from reading the scriptures, this knowledge has to be for self-improvement. So when I'm reading or when I'm listening, I have to put myself and say that the teacher is at this moment talking to me. A lot of times when we are listening or we are reading, you know, you say, you know, this thing, I must go tell my husband. My husband needs to hear this. Or my child, or my neighbor. You know, next time I'm going to, you know, it's good if you hear something and you go home and share it with your spouse or with your child or with your neighbor, and that encourages them also to pursue this knowledge is very good. But a lot of times we find that when we acquire a little bit of knowledge, we then start becoming teachers and we go around telling others how to improve their life. And they say, you know, you have this problem in your life, you need to improve it. But they say that the main purpose of this knowledge, that it is a mirror which shows me how I am. Do I have these impurities when we talk about desire or anger or hatred or jealousy or greed? Do I have it in me or do I not? If I have it, how can I eliminate it? And if I don't have it, then it's okay. Then I don't have to be proud or arrogant. I have to be grateful to the Lord. Oh, Lord, thank you for giving me this knowledge. Thank you for giving me this wisdom. So gratitude is a very, very important attribute that we need to have. In fact, somebody once told me that the only prayer worth doing is gratitude. Because when we go to the church or temple, we go with a list of demands. God, give me this, give me this, give me that, give me that. And then if I get it, it's okay. And if I don't get it, you know, I have all these things, but that one little thing I didn't get, so then I get angry at God or get angry at the world or get angry at my company or whatever. So they say that develop an attitude of gratitude, especially towards God, that when, oh Lord, I'm thankful for having got this human body. I could have been a cockroach, you know, crawling on the ground, or, you know, been a little worm, or, you know, I could have been anything. At least thank God I have this human body. I have this intelligence. I have my health. I have my abilities. And I have all this. The human being has infinite potential. You know, we have so much intelligence and we have so much love and compassion. We have so much ability. Every one of us is capable of becoming an Einstein. We are capable of becoming Buddha. We are capable of becoming Christ. We are capable of achieving anything if we put our mind to it. So start with an attitude of gratitude and contentment. Always remember the Lord. And once you do that, then you will find that you are comfortable where you are. I am fine. I am okay. They say that discontent should be for spiritual things, not for material things. Most of us are discontented. Why? Because I don't have this. Our discontent is for spiritually, I'm okay. As long as I go to church one day a week, on Sunday 1 hour, I'm fine. I don't have time for God. I don't have time for church. But we have all the time for our job, for our golf, for our gossip, for our phone call, for our internet. So they say be content materially, but be discontented spiritually. Oh God, I need to get closer to you. I need to evolve. But majority of us are contented spiritually and discontented materially. So you have to decide what is the one that I want in life. What is my goal? And once you know that goal, that my goal is spiritual progress, going closer and closer to God, then that becomes your overwhelming motive. And then the world, yes, you still need. We're not saying that you don't need a house and a job and a car and money. But I'm not madly pursuing the things of the world. But my goal is now, I'm madly pursuing the Lord. I'm madly pursuing spiritual growth. Madly does not mean that I don't use logic or reason. But that becomes my overwhelming goal in life. And then only you can progress. In any field in the world, if you say, I have done enough, then you will stop progressing. So that has to be the spiritual goal. That's why they call it mumukshutvam in our scriptures. There's a word mumukshutvam, which means an intense desire for liberation. Intense desire. At this moment, Lord, I am bound. I am caught in this world and I want to be free. And the only way to be free is to become one with Him and to realize that you are, within you is that infinite power and you are a perfect being. And when that comes, then you are free. That's what they say. Such a person is free from the duality, from the joys and sorrows, success and failure, heat and cold. And that is the state of a saint. That is the state of Buddha or Jesus or Swami Chinmayananda or Guru Nanak, where no matter what kind of problems they came across, but as long as they had the Lord with them and they had that power, they were complete, they were perfect. So that is the goal, that is the purpose of life. So, okay, so now we have talked about the problems in life, you know, about the impurities, about the sorrows. What is the cure? You know, how am I to get out of that? That we'll talk next week. So the answer will be next week. Thank you very much. If there's any comments, any questions.
So everything that we have pulls us, and mm-hmm. we're not free anymore because we're bound by all this stuff we thought we wanted.
Right. And the watch doesn't love me.
No.
You know, like I have a Corvette. I have a beautiful Corvette and I polish it and I shine it and I love it and I take care of it. It's my Corvette. Now, I love the Corvette, but does she love me? No. The next person who comes with the key, she'll go off with him. So worldly objects don't love us, but we love them. That's a very good point. Thank you. Yeah, that's very nice.
Figure out if you're just lying to yourself.
Yeah, I think just by a constant analysis, by constant alertness, you know, if I see something and I say that's beautiful, you know, she has a beautiful, you know, piece of jewelry, a beautiful 2-carat diamond. That's appreciation, but she has one. I wish I had one. Or why don't I have one? Or why doesn't my husband buy? Then that is jealousy. So if that one is appreciation, where if you appreciate, and the same thing can be for anything else, you know, anger and desire and all. I think by constant watching your thoughts and by being constantly aware of not only the thoughts, but what kind of emotions they create in my mind. When I see something or when I hear something or when I come across a situation, if it creates a disturbance in my mind, if my mind becomes unpeaceful, and that only happens when you have tasted that peace of mind and that quietude of mind. Like in your meditation, when your mind is very quiet, has become very peaceful, or when you go to sit in the church or a temple and your mind has become very peaceful, you have tasted that peace, tasted that joy. And then when you come across a worldly situation where that peace of mind gets disturbed, and you instantly know that, it's like a person who has always lived in Alaska, you know, always lived, and he's very comfortable in that cool environment. And suddenly you put him in Arizona, 115 degrees, you know, in July, he'll be very uncomfortable. I don't like that. I want to go back to my, you know, cool home. So similarly, once you have tasted that inner joy in your meditation, in your prayers, in your, then you get used to that joy. And then anything that disturbs this joy, you don't like that. You don't want it. And so I think by a constant awareness of what my mind is doing at this moment, that I think will tell you that this particular situation is creating a negative emotion in my mind, whether it's jealousy or anger or hatred or greed or desire. And so it will disturb that inner equanimity. So I think by tasting that inner equanimity and peace of mind, and then now knowing that I have that, then when that gets disturbed by alertness. So I think, I don't know if anybody else has any better answers.
I'm just wondering if sometimes people live in denial, particularly about their personality.
True. So I think either by what they say is that from time to time, take a very close, objective look at yourself. Who am I? What am I doing with my life? Where am I going? And what are the emotions arising? Or you can ask an other person whom you respect and, you know, whom you know will give you an objective. Could be a close friend, or could be somebody whom you can then ask, and whether that this kind of situation is happening. And so that person can give you the right advice, I think. But yeah, the denial, yes. But I think if you are honest with yourself, you will probably come to the answer yourself. You probably won't need to ask.
Enjoy what you have in life, but don't let it overcome you.
Yes.
That's what's
right. Right. Yeah, yeah. You have to take care of your car. We're not saying that it's okay to scratch the car. And yeah, that's okay to tell the kids, yeah, be careful, you know, because it's a new car and don't scratch it. But if for some reason it happened that you had a little, you know, somebody scratched the car or you had a little accident or you, you know, hit something, then it should not become that your life is all destroyed and you're finished and you're, you know, oh, my new car. And so taking care of your objects is good. We're not saying that. But becoming so attached to them, like I said, the car, you know, she's not attached to you. You are attached. So if it's, you know, if I have the car, thank you, Lord. You know, that's very good. But tomorrow if some situation gets bad and my car gets repossessed and I don't have a car, I have to go by bike. Okay, you know, I'm fine. You know, or I can walk to work or take the bus or ask somebody for a ride. So if my happiness is totally placed on that car or any particular object, then tomorrow if that car I don't have, then I'll become miserable, I'll become depressed, I'll become sad. But if I say with the car or without the car, I am okay, you know, and it's okay. I have to manage. Maybe I have to go start for work half an hour earlier. Okay, that's all right. I'll get another car. So that is called dependence, or that is called attachment. That is called, you know, where if I don't have it, then my life is nothing. But yeah, no, we should take care. You should take care of your car. You should take care of your body, you know, take care of your house, take care of your things. But without this dependence or without this attachment or without this feeling. Oh, yeah, overpower you. Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Yeah, thank you. There is this book called Drig Drishya Vivek, which some of you have done in the Tuesday class, where it is said that the objects are seen by the eyes. The eyes see the objects. The objects cannot see the eyes. Like this table, my eyes can see the table, but the table cannot see me. So the table is known to the eyes. Right? The eyes can say, this is a table, this is a phone, this is a book. Now the condition of my eyes, whether my eyes are clear or whether my eyes are, you know, are not clear, or whether my eyes are hurting, or I cannot see objects clearly, is known to the mind and the intellect. So the thoughts know the condition of the body. Like my hand is hurting, my eyes are hurting. The eyes do not know the thoughts. The eyes cannot say, let me see what this person is thinking. No, the eyes only can see the objects. The eyes are known to the mind and the intellect, the thoughts. But who knows the thoughts? Who knows the mind? It is that final knower, which we call as consciousness, or call as God, or call as soul, or that inner life. So that is the one we have to focus on. And that consciousness, which we call Om, cannot be known by the mind, cannot be known by the thoughts, because the thoughts are known to that. So today in the meditation, we'll focus on the absolute knower that knows the objects, knows the eyes, knows the thoughts, and also nothing else knows that, because that knows everything. And that is what we call God, or the inner life. Thank you.